Subcommittee on General Government. Today is Tuesday, June 12th, and we are going to be hearing Senate Bill 10 and House Bill 5026, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 10. And I see the Honorable Kate Brown here from the Oregon State Senate, and I'm sure she has some words of wisdom for us before we begin. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for allowing me to testify this morning. For the record, Kate Brown represents Senate District 21, Portland and the City of Milwaukee. Thanks so much for hearing this bill. As you know, this is the culmination of a lot of hard work by a lot of people. We believe that with the passage of the bill, Senate Bill 10 will be the most comprehensive changes to Oregon ethics laws since the Watergate era. There are a number of folks who've worked on this for over a four-year period. The Oregon Law Commission, we provided funding for them during last interim, and they spent a lot of time and energy along with their volunteer lawyers. There have been a number of legislators working on this project. So, briefly, the bill has five major components. First of all is the funding piece. Senate Bill 10 provides independent, dedicated funding to the GSPC by piggybacking on a pre-existing auditing fee within the Secretary of State's operation. Effectively, this gets the fox out of the hen house and assures that the Commission has the resources it needs for the future. The second major component is reporting requirements. Senate Bill 10 requires SEI, a Statement of Economic Interest filers, to file their statement online on a quarterly timeline. The mandatory reporting for this would not, on a electronic basis, would not be implemented till 2010. Lobbyist reporting requirements have been changed to ensure that we're providing clear and consistent information to the public, and lobbyists and legislators would report quarterly at the same time, providing the same information. Civil penalties, pursuant to the Law Commission's recommendation, Senate Bill 10 increases the maximum civil penalty the Commission may charge from $1,000 to $5,000. The bill also allows the Government Standards and Practices Commission to issue a written letter of reprimand or education in lieu of a violation. So it provides the Commission with a pretty wide array of tools in their toolboxes. The fourth piece, is the revolving door limit. Senate Bill 10 imposes a revolving door limit on legislators becoming lobbyists. Effectively, this is a one-year prohibition. It's fairly similar to a provision the House passed earlier this year. Gift limits, in general, the Senate Bill 10 changes the current gift limit of $100 to a $50 limit. It changes the items exempt from the definition of gifts, and it closed the loopholes that allow dinner and lobbyist paid travel. And then lastly, Senate Bill 10, and again, this is a Law Commission provision, allows public officials to establish a legal defense trust fund to pay legal expenses associated with ethics law complaints. You do have in front of you the -A28 amendments. In general, they provide for the auditing fee, the piggybacking piece, and then make some other changes to the bill. I'm happy to answer any questions. My understanding is that this bill has a number of paths, a number of places yet to go. After coming out of full Ways and Means, it will go, it's my understanding, to the Senate floor. Then it will go to the House, where I believe it will be referred to the House Rules Committee. So there's still a lot of work left to be done, and given the fact that there's about 2.5 weeks left of session, I urge you to move quickly on the bill. So, questions?
Thank you. Any additions to the, any comments, questions? Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, Senator Brown. In your opening statement, you made a comment about the Secretary of State and the Ethics Commission. Can you tell me again what that was? I either didn't have
sure.
my hearing aid turned up or something.
Your hearing aid, or maybe I wasn't loudly enough, which is not normally my problem. We provided for independent, dedicated funding to the GSPC by piggybacking on a pre-existing auditing fee that local municipalities pay to the Secretary of State's office. So instead of creating, we wanted a way for local municipalities, cities, counties, local governments to participate in the funding for the GSPC. About 50 to 60% of the complaints in front of the GSPC are at the local level. So instead of creating a new administration and a new way of collecting a fee from local municipalities, we use this Secretary of State's auditing fee that's already in place, and we piggybacked on that. I don't know who's brilliant. Actually, I think it was the city's idea. I was working on some ideas provided by the certified smart staff in the building, but we were looking for a way that there was already administration in place and would allow local municipalities to participate. So that's how we did that.
Senator Benson.
Senator Brown, did the local governments have a role in developing this funding mechanism?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Whitsitt, the question was a role for local governments in developing the legislation in terms of the funding proposal. What I would tell you is my understanding is that the auditing fee idea came from League of Oregon Cities, that folks from the League brought this proposal forward. I believe there were folks from local government sitting on the Law Commission panels at least participating in the hearings process. I'm looking for, yeah, I see a nod from Wendy Johnson. That is correct.
Thank you.
Chair would entertain a motion to adopt the, move the 828 to the bill.
Mr. Chair, prior to any votes on this and out of an abundance of caution, I'm going to declare a potential conflict of interest given that I have business with GSPC pending.
Mr. Chair, I move the 828 amendments to Senate Bill 10.
Senator Bates moves the 828 amendments to Senate Bill 10. Is there any questions, any discussion? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to clarify that the local governments have not, cities, counties have not expressed any kind of problem with using or increasing their Secretary of State audit fee to help fund the GSPC.
Mr. Chair, if I can respond to that, Representative Crummell. I think the response that I would give to you is that this was like a law school exam. This was the least worst of all the options for them. So I really appreciated their work. We were really reluctant to impose another fee on local governments given the struggles that they're having right now, but also felt really strongly that given that at least half of the complaints to the GSPC are generated at the local level, that was important for local governments to play a role. This was a proposal that they came forward with after we had some other proposals on the table. I think everyone felt like it was the least worst of all the options.
And follow up, Mr. Chair. And if I'm reading this correctly, it is cities, counties, school districts, special districts. So it looks like everybody gets to play in this. Okay. Or pay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, yes, everybody gets to pay to play.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, and just to add to that, even state agencies are also subject to an assessment based on FTE under this, for the state share of the costs of this.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
So just to clarify that point, DHS that has, what I'm just guessing, 10,000 employees would pay a disproportionately higher share than the Bureau of Massage Therapists.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that's correct. It would be based on other types of FTE-based assessments that the Department of Administrative Services collects for various services. So the more FTE you have, because since complaints are for individual public official actions, you have more risk, you pay a little bit more.
follow it, Mr. Chair?
Follow it.
I'm trying to ascertain whether or not there's sort of a separate category for, like, the university system. I'm just trying to think if there's a differentiation there between a state agency and a university populated with professors, and they would be treated the same under this bill is what I'm asking.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, they would be.
So, Mr. Chair, that begs a kind of a follow-up question. So if I'm understanding that correctly, then caseworkers, for example, that work in child protective services or other sorts of DHS settings, cash assistance, that sort of thing, would also be subject to this, so that if somebody felt like they were that a caseworker had a conflict of interest and was not acting appropriately, or was otherwise not acting appropriately or functioning appropriately, a member of the public could file a complaint against them with GSPC, and GSPC would be obligated to investigate it and come to a conclusion. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I believe that's the case under current law. Any public official is subject to that currently. Yes.
Okay, and one other question that's coming to mind right now, Mr. Chair, and that is, I see in the summary it says exempts judges or public officials serving judicial department from gift limits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell. I can actually respond to that. We exempted the judicial branch because they have their own ethics laws, which frankly are stricter than this, and it just seemed easier, frankly, to exempt them.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, what I want to avoid in some of the bills, only this one, the ones that are becoming for us soon, is questions about policy. These bills have been well vetted in their own committees, policy committees, and I think we've got some bills coming up that are even worse than this as far as getting into policy on. I'm going to really try to avoid that, although I'm one of the worst people for it. I get into it myself sometimes, so guilty as charged. We've got about 2 to 3 weeks left in the session. I'd very much like to see this bill moved across the Senate floor, Senate floor, and across the House. The House can get the first pretty good look at it. And on that basis, if you would entertain a motion, I would be willing to make one.
Got to adopt the
A28 first. Motion I wanted to make is we call the question.
Thank you, the chair. Appreciates that. We won't need the motion. We will. Just ask at this point if there's any objections to adopting the A28. Seeing none, so ordered, and we would then need a motion to move the Senate Bill 10 as amended to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a to pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I would so move.
Been moved by Senator Bates to pass the Senate Bill 10 as amended with the A28 amendments to the Full Ways and Means with the due path recommendation. Let me say, in conjunction and elaborate just a brief second on what Senator Bates had to say about policy and so forth. I know there are some other amendments that are pending out here. I know there's some questions about special districts that will probably be coming up. I believe that it will be possible to address those issues in the House Rules Committee, which is where this issue will be going after it comes back from the Senate. So while I think some of the concerns that people have are legitimate concerns, I believe that will be an appropriate place to address it, and we can then proceed from there with it. If there are no other questions, is there any objection? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And let's see, this is a Senate Bill 10. I assume that Senator Bates will be happy to carry it to the Full Ways and Means Committee and
Thank you.
On the Senate floor. And I believe if it comes out of rules, it will get a carrier there coming out of rules to go to the House floor. So
I would offer that on the House, on the Senate floor, Senator Brown might want to carry that.
Did she slip away from us? I gather
we can fix that later, sir.
We'd be happy to allow and accommodate that if the good senator would like to carry it. So she probably would recognize the eloquence with which Senator Bates would carry the bill on the Senate floor, and might prefer to. We'll leave that up to her discretion.
Thank you.
With that, then, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 10. Thank you, Mr. Rocco.
Boy, Mr. Chair, you know how to clear out a room.
Well, I tell you, that makes sense. committee where we've had such poor attendance, and then just with one bang of a gamble, it's gone. I don't know. I would have thought, given the nature of the next topic that we are going to be bringing up, that we might have had some folks from another agency in here, but I don't see any of them, so I guess if we could vote not to move their budget, they'll be all right.
Maybe fine. Can we just kill it?
Okay with me. Over there.
And with this, we're going to I guess we close the work session on Senate Bill 10 and open the work session on House Bill 5026, the Office of the Governor. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Would you brief us on what we are doing and want to do with this particular budget?
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I hope you have my June 8th memo. If you don't, I have more copies here.
Let's see.
The one that's dated June 8th.
We
can deliver important stuff. Yeah. That way when someone calls me and says I didn't receive it, I can growl and say I delivered it. Thank you.
You do? This is the one I had it for.
Yeah, you know, you want the June 8th. Okay. It's important you have the one with the right data.
My schedule tells me that we have about an hour with perhaps one or two interruptions for the call of the House. If we could proceed as quickly as we can.
Sure. Now, first of all, I will say with the committee that this has been reviewed with the Office of the Governor and the co-chairs. And the chief of staff is supposed to be here. He was in my office and got called somewhere a few minutes ago. Okay, I'll walk through. The governor's budget, we're going to begin the beginning point for purposes of our discussion we're recommending is what's referred to as the modified essential budget level. And the modified essential budget level simply reflects the lack of receipt of federal and other funds for the Office of Rural Policy and took out those two positions. The governor's budget then had a policy option package to restore those positions using general fund. So what I'd like to get is that for purposes of this discussion, we're beginning with the modified essential budget level, and the recommendations then are from that point forward. And so with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'll just briefly summarize that it's right here. This is the result of a review and action on or recommendations on policy option packages, as well as recommendations on truing up the Office of the Governor for staffing that otherwise have not existed on budget, have been paid for out of other agency budgets and transfers from general fund and the like. I will begin by going through the recommendations on the policy option packages and then follow it with the recommendations on the staffing and the like.
Please proceed.
Yeah, okay. With the respect to the federal office, that was policy option package 100. We're recommending approval. There was wide agreement on the need for the office, so we're recommending approval of that package, minus $50,000. That was in the budget for unspecified other support costs, and they think it can be a lesser amount, also maybe using other agency budgets and staff. But in effect, $50,000, the governor's office is okay with that lesser amount. That would be a general fund of $429,132. Option package 101, National and Regional Governors Association dues. We are recommending approval of the package as it was presented. Remember the governor's office, we had taken that out during the special sessions and it had not been restored, and we are recommending restoration of those. Those were included in the governor's budget. Option package 102, general fund for the Office of Rural Policy. Our original recommendation was to not fund it because there was a lack of demonstrated accomplishments and achievements. Testimony provided indicated there was a lot of support for continuing, at least giving it an opportunity to present, put together a business plan, develop metrics for outcomes, and come back to the regular session or the special session in 08. So we are recommending nine months of funding. That's that would fund the two positions. One actually is one and a half position until the end of March of 2008. And that's at a cost of $149,226. The with the understanding that they would come back then to the special session with a laid out business plan for review by the assembly that would have outcomes, performance measures, what they intend to accomplish, how they intend to accomplishment, and the like. Rather than give them another 2 years to proceed the way they have. So we're recommending 9 months of funding. Again, this funding within those positions will go away at the end of March of next year, unless the legislature takes additional action. Policy option package.
Question, Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's probably more of a statement as opposed to a question. I would say that this particular piece of the governor's office, in my estimation, is on life support. And if they don't act to do the things that we've asked them to do by the end of March, then I think we very much should eliminate it, because I'm not sure that we're getting our money's worth in terms of the investment that we're putting in versus what we're getting out of it.
I think the nature of what the option package was designed for. It's got a timer on the electricity on the life support system, and when that time comes, if there's not action by the legislature that indicates that the legislature is satisfied with what we're doing, that will be the outcome.
And Mr. Chair, if you'd like, we have the governor's chief of staff here, and he can speak to this also. And if you would get it on the record, I would recommend that we have some sort of positive assurance from the office of the governor on this. Not that we don't trust them, but just want them, because we have reviewed this in detail with them.
I would also like to point out, Mr. Chair, that in terms of the performance measures, they need to be outcomes based.
Yes.
I don't really give a rip how many meetings they go to. I want to know what they're doing for rural Oregon.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Chip Terhune. I'm the chief of staff for Governor Kulongoski. Want to ask you, so specifically, am I commenting on the life support system, the electricity, the timer?
Now we pull the plug.
Right. Message received. I think it's safe to say that, as I understand it in our conversations with you, that you have clearly given us a set of goalposts by which to, I think, strive for between now and February of next year when you guys reconvene. I think it's going to be incumbent upon the governor's office to roll up the sleeves and put together a plan and a package that meets with your approval. And we understand very clearly that that needs to be outcomes-based. Message received.
Senator Bates.
I think Senator Johnson is first. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Terhune, thanks for coming down this morning. The governor set this up in 2004 because of what is a very real problem in Oregon, which is what I consider the urban-rural divide. And I think he made a great effort here to better hear the voices of those people, those Oregonians living in rural and frontier areas in the state. I think that was the purpose of this. I think that purpose still exists. I think the reason for it still exists. I'm not sure this agency has gotten to where it's supposed to go to get the job done. If in the next 9 months, as you look through this, if you don't feel this is the right way to go, please suggest something else. That the issue is still there. People in rural and areas of the state do not feel connected to this state government as people do in the big cities. They just don't. I've been out there. I've talked to them. We all have. This difference in opinions and feelings about different issues is really significant, and I really appreciate the governor trying to bridge that gap with this. And we want that to go forward. But this particular commission just hasn't quite gotten there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, thank you for that. I think that there is no question that the urban-rural divide is very real, that I think listening and convening are hugely critical functions that we need to engage in, not just from the governor's office, but all of state government. I also appreciate the expression of some flexibility in terms of how we might sort of look at retooling and refocusing and delivering something that is outcomes-based back to you. And I think that, quite frankly, we're up to the task.
Senator Johnson.
You're sort of a target of opportunity being here, having the ability to make some of these connect points. Looking at Mrs. Penwell in the back of the room also strikes me that one of the other budgets that we're going to be dealing with where clearly there's relevance for the Office of Rural Policy is in economic development and trying to figure out the role of the regional and rural boards. And it may be that there are some overlapping assignments that will come out of this legislative session for both the Office of Rural Policy and those regional and rural boards, specifically the creation of a coherent needs and issues list for each one of the counties that can be used both by local government, by state-elected folks like the legislature, as well as our federal delegation, so that we all are sort of working with a prioritized set of projects to bring a little more coherence to how we deal with those projects that come through a variety of portals looking for funding, specifically at OECDD. It would be lovely to be able to know exactly what Klamath County's agreed upon needs are sort of organically bubbling up locally, coming through these rural and regional boards, and then tied into a bigger plan that we can use our federal lobbyists to help with. And I just wanted to call to your attention that my perception, at least, of the overlap and the possibility for them to work together to make sure that there's ample public process in developing these lists and that they're as useful as they can possibly be.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, thank you for that. I think that we will take a look at this not just from the Office of Rural Policy viewpoint, but from a much more comprehensive viewpoint. I think that you've been very clear this session about your desire, and I think others' desires, frankly, because it's not just yours, in terms of getting that bubbling up, if you will, from local communities in terms of what priorities they see as their needs. And I think that there may be a nexus between the Office of Rural Policy and the Rural Regional. And I think that it's incumbent upon us, again, to find that nexus and to make it valuable and to make sure that it has direct impact in a positive way for those communities.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
I thank you for your response. I think that the assignment that I'm discussing and that nexus is purely a mechanical one. It's just getting the list. ideally, in a fully developed Office of Rural Policy, there would be touch points at a lot of the big issues that affect the state, land use, economic development, recruitment, those sorts of things. I'm really talking about a mechanical function that I believe the Office of Rural Policy had secured a grant to do some of the work, but just hadn't performed. And philosophically, I think they're different, but there's this mechanical touch point, and that's all I wanted to just bring to your attention.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Mr. Jehan, in my mind, the urban-rural divide is primarily characterized by a debate over the use or the preservation of natural resources. I think that in my mind, the Office of Rural Policy should be an advocate for the natural resource users, a voice for them to a manner for their voice to be expressed to the governor and his staff as to specifically what natural resource regulation, the positive and negative effects that it has on their well-being and their communities. I don't believe that has been properly addressed.
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, this is very helpful for us as we move forward and begin to sort of explore the concrete direction that we need to move forward between now and February on this. So that's good input for us. I will definitely take that back and incorporate it. Thank you.
And Edward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not to beat a dead horse, but I just wanted to take the opportunity, since we're talking about the urban and rural divide, to say that while I see a lot of value in a policy advisory aspect and outreach aspect of this office, let's not kid ourselves that the urban-rural divide is going to magically disappear because we've got one position that's funded in this state. And it's going to continue to be a raw nerve as long as legislators continue to bring in what, in my opinion, are some ridiculous bills before this body to vote on. And you know, with regard to what Senator Whitsitt alluded to about use versus preservation of natural resources, I hear it all the time. Urban legislators essentially saying, well, we know what's good for you in rural Oregon, and rural Oregon saying, well, no, you don't, and we'd rather not have your help. And as somebody that has lived in rural Oregon and represents a more urban district, I find the lack of respect for one another rural versus urban problematic, and I just wanted to say that, you know, I think that this office can serve a great role from an advisory standpoint on policy, and it can do some outreach things, but, you know, if we want to get serious about mending some of that divide, we need to look in the mirror.
Thank you, Representative.
The next policy option package was for technology upgrades. We're recommending approval of that minus the $46,200 that we have provided in the current biennium. This is not just for equipment, but it's also for support from the Department of Administrative Services and licenses and the like. So it's not just for computers and printers. They are in desperate need of that support. And funding for it dropped off. DAS has been sort of carrying the load, if you will, for the governor's office for its share of network costs and the like. And so we are recommending approval of that package. Policy option package 104 is two positions for economic development policy support. We're not recommending approval of this package. We've got a discussion a little bit later about truing up the staff in the governor's office, and we'll discuss it in that and not make a separate policy package. The increased airfare was a policy option package for $160,000, a little over $160,000. We're recommending $77,519 of this as to balance to what the co-chairs had originally provided for in their co-chairs budget. Again, we've discussed this with the governor's office, and I think the additional funds are needed and will be put to good use. The policy option package 106 is just for increased other funds limitation for the governor's marketplace. They expect donations, and this is just a package to provide for the expenditure limitation of those donations, and we're recommending approval of that. Policy option package 107 was for remodel office and purchase of furniture and fixtures. We're not recommending approval of that for the well-discussed reason about the changes going on in this building, and so we'll set aside that. We're recommending that not be approved at this time. Those are the recommendations with the existing policy packages. We then move on to our recommendations on formalizing. I've characterized it as formalizing positions in the governor's office. There are a number of positions in the governor's office that aren't on any budgets. The positions are. We are recommending putting them in the governor's office and funding them via a combination of other funds that come from other agencies and general fund support. So the first one was one that we had discussed quite a while ago. This is establish and fund one position that would be the Director of Economic Revitalization Team. The rest of the team is funded, and we are recommending funding this position. It's $266,571 of lottery funds. That's consistent with the funding that we have for this economic revitalization team. This position is currently a double fill in the Department of Administrative Services and paid for by the Department of Administrative Services. So we would reduce the Department of Administrative Services other funds budget by the same amount here, and that will be part of the amendment to the governor's budget bill.
Mr. Johnson.
I just, at this point, want to understand what the reporting structure is for the economic revitalization team. I am a big supporter of that function, but I'm trying to understand, you've got the team members, then you've got somebody who kind of oversees them, then this is somebody on top of that somebody?
No, this is that somebody who oversees them.
Okay. Who's, is there an incumbent in this position right now?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, yes, there is, in the form of Ray Naff.
Okay.
So this is in the formation you described, the team would report to this individual, and it is that staff person that is currently in place.
Follow up. Then I'm trying to understand. There had been someone else in the management structure of the ERT, Gabriella.
Oh, Gabriella's always been in there and still in there and funded in the position. She has a separate function from Ray's.
Okay.
Right. Chair Jensen, Senator Jensen, she's technically a project coordinator as opposed to the manager of the ERT team.
Okay.
Great. Okay. Thank you. We're recommending the establishment and funding of three workforce development positions. These are positions that currently are there. They are funded by two policy advisors that are paid 50-50 by the Employment and Community Colleges and Workforce Development Department, I believe out of federal funds, and these expenditures qualify for the use of that. So we will transfer the money from those two departments to the governor's office and record the positions in the governor's office. And there's one position paid for by the Department of Consumer and Business Services. So we're recommending formally establishing the positions in the governor's office and funding them with other funds that would come from revenue transfers that from the Consumer and Business Services, Community Colleges, Workforce Development, and Employment Department. The monies are already in those budgets as expenditure for expenditure limitation. We will reduce the expenditure limitation in those budgets and just make it a revenue transfer and record the expenditure in the governor's office budget. So state budget-wise, we're not changing anything. We're just moving the expenditure and formalizing the position.
Senator Wetzel.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Dallas, the number in my figures, the numbers don't add up here. You've got a increase of spending at a limitation by $590,000, and you're going to reduce it by $355,000, which leaves about a $234,000 difference.
Is that a typo in my my that's a typo on my part, and I apologize. Oh, it's each, sir. The 233-631 is each of the two departments. So community colleges and employment department would each be reduced by 233, and the Department of Consumer and Business Services would be reduced by 122. I believe if you add those up, they'll come up to the 590. Thank you. Thank you. The governor's office also deals with a great number of citizens' inquiries and issues. They take on a role of not only taking them in, but following up, getting responses and correspondence in and out. They are behind in that workload, and they'd like to establish and fund two support positions that are now being funded from other agencies. One is a double fill in the Department of Administrative Services, and another a double fill in the Department of Housing and I can't remember the rest of it. In the Housing Department. So we're recommending formally establishing the positions in the governor's office and to increase the other funds limitation, reduce the other funds limitation in those two departments. We are then recommending the establishment and funding of one support position for minority women and emergency small business that's currently being paid for by the Department of Transportation. You know, the Women and Minorities and Emerging Small Business Program is funded from Consumer and Business Services and DAS assessments. ODOT now has gotten more involved with this because of federal contract requirements, and so an additional support position is being funded by the Department of Transportation for this. So we were putting that support position. The other two positions have long been in the governor's office budget. We're just putting this, recommending this additional support position that is currently there being funded by ODOT because of the increased workload. Although the position was recommended when the governor's office came to this, it had a recommendation of two different positions each half time. We are recommending one position to be split between the affirmative action and minority and emerging small business positions. There's also existing one generalist, for want of a better description, a generalist policy advisor position. It kind of pinch hits or is like a utility infielder quite often. has a lot of experience in state government and fills in when people are out or some new issue comes up and needs to be dealt with. And that position has been currently funded by a double fill in the Department of Administrative Services. We're saying it's been a position that's been there off budget for a while. We're recommending let's put it on budget. We will reduce the Department of Administrative Services budget by this amount. It no longer will meet the expenditure limitation. It will transfer revenue. We will record the position and the expenditure in the governor's budget. There's also one additional executive support position that currently is funded by a Department of Consumer and Business Services. This is scheduling and other matters within the governor's office. We are recommending establishment of that with a reduction in the Department of Consumer and Business Services budget. There are two policy advisors in a support position, I believe, that are currently in the Department of Human Services budget, paid for by the Department of Human Services budget. And the reason they are paid for there is because they do work that qualifies for federal matching funds for Medicaid and the like. So although they function within the governor's office, in this case, because of the federal match requirement, we think it's better to acknowledge that they are in the DHS budget and they are on budget, they are positions, but that they do provide support for the governor's office. So we were recommending, however, that they be left in the Department of Human Services budget. But we've got it on the record as saying, okay, there are people out there in agency world that can provide support to and for the governor's office and be included in agency budgets if it's appropriate. So
Chair Jensen, what is the biennial cost of that, of those three?
Oh, sugar. I mean, I would ask if Ms. Ames from Budget and Management, because I left that sheet of paper in my office, I believe. Yes, I did, because I was working up the amendment to the bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I don't have the numbers either. Mr. Chair, Linda Ames with Department of Administrative Services. Just knowing roughly what the positions are paid, I would imagine that it would be $600,000 to $650,000 total for the three positions. But I can get the detail for
that's
you.
That's close enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Those are all of the ones, the recommendations on positions that are currently being paid by transfers or out of other agency budgets. So we are recommending putting those on the budget. Again, the whole reason for this exercise, before I finish it, is to get the position count in the governor's office, one that reflects what's there, and that the governor's office has said it needs to operate effectively. You know, we've been robbing Peter to pay Paul, if you will, in the past. We're just formalizing it, getting on record. We are recommending some new general funded positions. Some of these, the cost will be offset by what were programmed general fund payments from other agencies, and so not all of the cost, some of it will be offset by reductions in other budgets. The first is the additional deputy chief of staff position. The governor's office wants to reorganize. It says the span of control is way too wide for the chief of staff and just one deputy. The chief of staff wants to have two deputies each assigned certain responsibilities, and then the chief of staff has oversight of those and can focus more than on being an outside person. And that is at a cost of $302,496.
Mr. Chair, that is position now held by Alan Allen.
Yes. The governor's office wants to establish three additional policy advisor positions. They believe they need it in the areas of economic development, higher ed, education, and energy. Total general fund for these positions, $721,340. There will be an X number of policy advisor positions within the governor's office. We think that as times change, the expertise may change. You know, the priority issues may need to change. So, but that as a core number of policy advisors, they'll have enough to deal with issues. And hopefully, moving forward, and we're not always adding that as things fall off. As far as hot button issues or priority issues, they can then reassign or make assignments different, but have enough policy advisors to support the office. We are recommending four additional back office support positions, two to provide and track, monitor communications and support communications efforts, including the website. You heard the testimony of the office administrator also. Is responsible for the flurry of emails on press releases, as well as maintaining website, as well as trying to manage the office budget and other things that we need. We do believe that the back office needs to be beefed up a bit. One support person to policy advisors, and another additional one with a backlog to deal with citizen inquiries. Total general fund of $421,000 for those four positions. These costs will be offset in part by reductions in general fund to the Department of Corrections, Oregon Youth Authority, and Military Department. I have provided a spreadsheet to you which summarizes that, the net effect. There's one other recommendation on a revenue transfer. This is a technical transfer. It's not in the budget. It was an oversight. We'll reflect the transfer. The expenditures recorded in there. And this is for to fund costs of the Energy Facility Siting Council. Maybe in the next biennium they'll change that, so they'll move the cost of supporting that to the Department of Energy. Right now, the governor's office supports it, but with monies transferred from the Department of Energy. Other budget-related items, this is just sort of my discussion that we want on the record that we expect the Office of the Governor to move forward with the newly approved positions, serving as the core needs of a functioning Office of the Governor. And we would expect that the office would constantly evaluate operations and, when necessary, make changes to staff functions and responsibilities using existing staff and financial resources that we require of other state agencies, you know, permanent financing and the like, rather than hold them to an artificially low FTE level and then supplementing the budget through all these off-budget mechanisms. We do believe that there will be the need for what I would call off-budget special project positions, that as things that the governor's office should be able to reach out to an agency with an expertise in human services or economic development or a natural resource and say, I need someone that comes to my help me. We've got an issue. We need help with on a project basis. But again, they shouldn't be creating off-budget positions. We should be accessing agencies and just understand that agencies need to step up to the plate. They've got the expertise, and they can do it like on loan management personnel or the like through some sort of operating agreement. But those needs should continue in the future, and we should be able to discuss them. They shouldn't, but they should be have a finite life. You know, they shouldn't continue ad infinitum in off budget or however, and be able to be explained to the legislature as to this purpose and timeline. So with that, I will wrap it up by saying what this would mean then is a 64 positions or 62.56 FTE. The 62.56 FTE is because of the 9 months for the Office of Rural Policy. General fund of $11,342,242, lottery funds of $2,121,625, and other funds limitation of $2,423,023. The funding of the Economic Revitalization Team was brought forward as an issue by the Association of Oregon Counties. This funding was set up for the Economic Revitalization Team in the 05 session, I believe it was, because in 03, when it was first established in statute, we cobbled together funding stream, the co-chairs and the executive branch worked together and agreed upon 50-50. We felt it was appropriate that 50% of these lottery funds come out of the county's 2.5% of video lottery proceeds. For the 07-09 biennium, they're expecting about 45 to 47 million. This would take about one. This would be 1 million of that for the, and we still believe that the counties do benefit. And so that has been the position of funding for that, and it will continue in this budget. With that, Mr. Chair, I have.
Okay. I'd like to, before we get to the questions, comment a little bit. And first off, I'd like to thank the governor's office for coming forth with some of the recommendations for what I would kind of call a little more truth in advertising. As far as their office is concerned, the people that we're talking about here today, or the positions we're talking about, currently exist at least for the most part in the governor's office. It's just kind of a convoluted system that they have as far as identifying them, and it's difficult for the public, and it's difficult for the legislature to be able to deal with this. It's costing us a little bit more general fund money right now to do this, but I think the transparency, the clarity of the governor's office is going to be beneficial to the governor's office as it appears out there to the public and to the legislature. And so I very much appreciate the work that Mr. Terhune has done as he has worked with myself and this committee and with Legislative Fiscal in trying to put together this package in relationship to the positions in the governor's office. And with that, I know I have some questions, or I thought I saw hands. Senator Bates.
I have one question and a statement real quickly. Is your intent to move the budget out today? I'd like to see that happen because we're a little short on the House side right now.
We are a tad short.
Yeah. I hope we can remedy that quickly if we need to, because we're on the floor in about 15 minutes. And I think you've summed up exactly what's going on. And this is really about transparency. The governor's office in the last 5 or 6 years, along with the rest of state government, has been cut and cut and cut to the point that we're really concerned about having the tools you need to get your job done. I think it makes it clear and straightforward. The extra funding, I think, is appropriate. I mean, you've got all kinds of issues coming up here before we're out of this bullion, before we get back to it. That ONC problems, transportation problems, the health care reform. You can write down the list, economic development, environmental concerns, energy, state police, goes on and on and on. You've got to have the tools to take care of that. I think what you've outlined here is appropriate, and really very supportive of this budget. I don't know how other members of the panel feel, but I think it's a step in the right direction, and we're there for you right now as far as I'm concerned. The only issue I have is getting the people on that side to come back and have a vote in this thing.
Senator Johnson?
I know that we're going to deal with performance measures before we vote on this budget, but I'm going to jump ahead and comment on them if that's acceptable to the chair.
But of course.
One of the things that concerns me is the restatement of the certified industrial sites. The new performance measure, it would be number of industrial sites certified as project ready, versus any conversation about what ones are developed. And I don't know whether this is a governor's office function or it's an Oregon Economic and Community Development function, but it seems to me that we have invested this huge amount of money that is, in many quarters, misunderstood. We have sites, some are sitting fallow, and I don't like the idea of losing tracking what ones are developed. And I would submit to you, maybe this is really not a measure for the governor's office at all, although the governor was instrumental in having the conversation about making sure Oregon was open for business by having these sites. I'm just concerned about not tracking how many of them are actually developed.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, we'll look into that. I think just off the top of my head, you're right in that measurement may be more appropriately housed with economic development. But having said that, irrespective, it needs to be tracked. We need to know not just what are project already, but what are actually being successfully developed. I mean, that's very logical.
Okay. Other, Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. I think I would compliment you and LFO staff and the governor's staff for making this budget more transparent. But I do think we need to address the point that we're continuing the shift of power from the legislative branch to the administrative branch. If you compare these figures today in this budget with the legislative approved budget for the last biennium, we have a 37.5% increase in FTE, 46% increase in funding, 44% increase in general fund, and about a $3.5 million increase in general fund in actual dollars. That's quite a cloud. I understand the vagaries there where we're actually calling it what it is this time as compared to what it appeared to be last time. But I'm struggling with that premise of continuing the shift of power away from the legislative branch.
Thank you very much for that comment and that observation, Senator, and I share your issues and concerns. I think, however, and it's at least my hope ever in doing what we're doing here to try for the legislature to get a little better handle on this and perhaps to be able to increase its or improve its role in this whole process. Very difficult for us when there's no accusation about this particular governor. From what I understand, this has kind of gone on from time immemorial. The next legislature, 4 years, 6 years, whatever down the road, will itself have to be fairly vigilant on this issue, as hopefully we are trying to be here.
I would wonder, Mr. Chair, how it would fly if our legislative council reached out to the Department of Justice and plucked out a few people to help them, and if LFO reached out to BAM and picked out a few people to help them and so forth, whether that would be considered appropriate function of the government.
It might be frowned on.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bates.
I agree with the comments by Senator Whitsitt. I would offer, though, that it's always the cobbler's wife that has no shoes, and we're in a situation here where the budget is now trued up much better than it ever has been before. So as long as those increases aren't real, but there are some increases that are real here, and that's 7 through 10 in the LFO's recommended budget. The other part, though, is really the false ours. We have allowed the legislative assembly, and we have allowed ourselves to be diminished by not properly funding ourselves through fear, I think, of retribution in the polls. And we need to step past that. We need to fix these wings. We need to bring salaries up. We need to bring up proper staff in LC and LFO. And that's going to cost some money. And you just can't step around that. We get great work out of these people, and we pay them not what they're worth, and we work them harder than they should be worked. And Dallas, thank you for your help once again on this particular budget and all the budgets we've been working with. We really do, in moments of silence, think of you guys.
Thank you.
We will be dealing a little bit with that, maybe next Wednesday, Tuesday or Wednesday.
I'm looking forward to that. I know we're going to make some changes this year, finally.
Yeah.
We need to do more in the future, but at least a step in the right direction.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Chair Jensen, members of the subcommittee, I just very quickly wanted to also, from the governor's office and from the governor himself, tell you thank you. This has been, if I'm not misstating this, I mean, let me know, Dallas, but I think this has probably been one of the most thorough vettings of the governor's office budget that's occurred in some time.
Certainly has since I've been here.
And, I think engaging in this conversation has tremendous value from the governor's perspective as well as from, I hope, the legislator's perspective. This will enable us internally to, I think, manage this office in a new and improved way. And I think also, as the chair indicated, increased transparency and accountability to a new level. So we're excited about this and really appreciate the opportunity.
Can we, without any more, get the motions and get this through so you all can get on the floor and we can get there before they get a call of the House?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move the LFO recommendation with respect to House Bill 5026, the Office of the Governor.
Senator Johnson moves the LFO recommendations with respect to House Bill 5026, the Office of the Governor. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered, and noting that Representative Crummell and Representative Galizio are excused.
With respect to the performance measures, we made some recommendations, some of them, and we would ask that you, essentially we were asking them to come back with developing some data and targets for some of the new measures, and they will need to come back also with Office of Rural Policy. So if you would approve the recommendations on the performance measures.
Mr. Chair, recognizing the LFO recommendation and also acknowledging the reality that there may be some reorganization in the governor's office, I would move the performance measures for House Bill 5026, recognizing that they will, the governor's office will report back on modifications and adjustments.
Thank you, Senator. I think you've heard the motion. Is there discussion? One observation and perhaps semi-amendment to that that I might want, and I don't think I want to put it in the form of amendment, but I'd like to see some of those things by the time we get to the February session, if that's...
I think, Mr. Chair, that your suggestion was contemplated in my motion.
Yes, I think so, and I think it was contemplated by the Chief of Staff and the Governor's Office, too, so I believe we're in accord on that.
We have a vote that's while we're contemplating. Can we have a vote here?
Yes. Is there any objection? No objections. So ordered with that. And again, noting Representative Cromwell, Representative Galizzi, are excused.
And I think you need a final motion, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill 5026, the budget for the Office of the Governor, to the Joint Committee on full Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Johnson moves the House Bill 26 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass, as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing that, so ordered. Carriers, Representative, what's it? Would you like to carry it not on the Senate floor? Senator Johnson would love to carry on the floor. That's fine.
We'll save it.
I just wanted to, you know, give you the chance to venture out on the thin ice of the whole process. I'll carry it in the poll and on the House floor.
Thank you.
And with that, our business for the day has been completed. We thank the Governor's Office very much for their help and participation in this, and we thank you all for your work and participation in it, and we are adjourned.